This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Lucy Gent Foma. She's author of the new book, Funded, How I Leveraged My Passion to Live a Fulfilling Life and How You Can Too. She will be speaking on Saturday, the 30th of April at 5:30 at the Rail Yard Performance Center. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me, Mary Charlotte.
So tell us a little bit about your story. You, fairly early in life, namely college, decided that you had some dreams that you wanted to fulfill, but those things don't just fall in your lap. You have to work for them, and there's all kinds of failure and rejection that comes before success.
Yep. Yeah, well, I graduated from college in a year where there weren't very many jobs.
What year was that?
2009.
That was a bad year.
That was a bad year. And a lot of my friends were seeking jobs in anything. I like to mention one of my friends who was a gov major and was trying to get a job even as a secretary for a plumber. She was so desperate. So instead of going the route of applying for a million different things, I thought, you know, why don't I create what I want to do and see if I can make that happen? And miraculously, I did acquire a skill set in college, which was getting fellowships and scholarships to do what I was interested in doing.
So what were you interested in doing?
I was interested in traveling and making the world a better place. And the way that that looked when I was in college was working in microfinance in Cameroon. And then after college, immediately after college, doing an education program for middle schoolers, also in Cameroon, around burning plastic bags and the harmful effects that that can have on humans.
I think that's such an interesting and important thing because there are people, I mean, we have been educated about plastic and litter, which we produce and consume huge amounts of, but for a society where, I mean, for untold centuries, if not millennia, they ate off of biodegradable
things.
Essentially leaves.
Yeah, that's exactly. So when I had been there for the microfinance fellowship that I did, I saw that instead of using leaves and things that they would naturally, you know, traditionally use to cook in, they started using these little plastic baggies in Cameroon and boiling them and then having nowhere to put them after they'd consumed the food, and so burning them. And I asked them, in Cameroon, they speak a language, Pidgin English, and they call the plastic bags papers. And so I said, do you realize there's a difference between like actual paper and this plastic? And they're like, no, isn't it pretty much the same thing? And I said, no, it's like a petroleum product. You really don't want to be burning this. But just a simple disconnect in what that product was leading to a really disastrous effect on people who were inhaling this smoke. And what I thought was, if I can talk to kids who are a more captive audience and more receptive audience, maybe I can start to change how this is going. And, you know, that summer, which was in 2009, we did a letter writing campaign as a result of this program that I did. And we delivered letters to the Ministry of Environment and asked them to ban thin plastic bags, which are the main polluting plastic bag. And in 2014, the country did ban plastic bags. And so it was like, wow, you know, you can actually make a difference. And even though it's this tiny, I got like a small little grant to do that project. But if you have a vision and you have something that you see a need for, it can really manifest and turn into something that's much bigger and have a larger effect.
What drew you to Cameroon?
I was not drawn to Cameroon. I was placed there, actually. This first fellowship that I got was in microfinance. And I wanted to go to Africa to work in microfinance and help small farmers and entrepreneurs and business people get loans to just grow their businesses. And so I got the fellowship, which was miraculous, thanks to many people in Santa Fe. Actually, Anna Reinhart was one of the people who helped me with that. And they said, okay, you got it. You're going to go to Cameroon. And I was like, I don't even know where that is. But it ended up being one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And I've had a long relationship and connection to Cameroon since then. but it wasn't by choice. It was that I was trying to go to Africa to do something I was interested in, and that's where they placed me.
One of the things that what you're talking about now and that you talked about in your book is the importance of learning to do each step of this process. And one of those pieces is getting a mentor, getting somebody mm-hmm. to walk you through things that seem very daunting at first.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's one of the crucial elements. And I wrote this book so that anyone who has a dream or a project they want to fulfill can find funding for it. But that doesn't take away from the crucial part of having somebody who will work with you, you know, one-on-one and oversee what you're doing or just even give you feedback about what you're doing. So that is one of the chapters in the book is where do you seek out a mentor? Because a lot of people, you know, they have an idea, but they're like, I don't even know who to talk to about this. And one of the key parts of being a mentee is, you know, being a worthy mentee. How do you go about being somebody that someone wants to help and doesn't just like cringe when they see your call come up on their phone or an email from you? So having worked with some really amazing mentors myself and having had the great privilege of doing that, I've kind of put together a list of things that I think every mentee should be aware of and then also what they should do to reciprocate the favor that they've received.
You eventually became a Fulbright scholar, but that also was a bumpy road. It didn't just happen overnight.
Yeah, I like to tell people that story because, you know, if you read off my bio, which I know you didn't, but, you know, I have gotten a number of very large scholarships and fellowships to date, and everything I've done in the past 7 years has been through a fellowship or scholarship. But I didn't get the Fulbright on my first try. I was a finalist the first year, and then I had to try again, and it was really devastating because that was a lot of my emotional energy and time and other people's energy that had been put into my application, and to not get it was a real blow to my self-esteem, and I didn't know what I was going to do. But that's part of this process, is learning how to deal with rejection. And my personal philosophy, which I'll share with you, but is also in my book about rejection, is they're not rejecting me. And that's what allows me to keep going. They're rejecting what I turned in because it's not good enough yet, needs to be revised more or improved upon. Or I didn't submit it to the right audience. Because if you're trying to resonate with some audience who is going to give you money, but it doesn't mean anything to them, they're not looking for that kind of an application, they're not looking for the kind of candidate that you are, obviously it's not going to be a good match. So that's how I deal with rejection, because I have faced a lot of no's in this process, and my ratio in general is like 4 to 1, you know, 4 rejections to 1 success. So for all of the things that I have done, know that I've tried other things and haven't accomplished it. So it is a long road, but that's one of the lessons of life, I think, and something that I've picked up from this whole process of applying for applications or submitting applications, is you have to know how to pick yourself up again and keep going, and how to make yourself stronger for having experienced that.
And reframe success as 4 rejections and 1 acceptance is success.
Yeah, that's success. Yeah, that's a really good point, is what is success? It's, you know, having the experience of both the rejection and the accomplishment. Yeah, it's a process.
So you then went to Senegal. What did you do there?
So I went to Senegal on a Fulbright to do dance research. And my parents in Santa Fe have been doing dance and drum for 30 years. My mom's been teaching 30 years this year in the Railyard district. So
the wonderful Elise.
Yeah, Elise Gent.
and your father, Eric, who's
Eric
a
Gent.
Wonderful percussionist.
Yes, yeah. And so I had always been close to African music and culture growing up in that tradition. And what I saw was that if I could go and do research in Senegal and dance with these griot artists, the people who are tradition holders, I could, one, bring back some of that culture, but I could also take the skills that I had learned in microfinance and economics, which was my undergrad major, and try and help establish a little bit more how artists can support themselves in Senegal instead of having this large emigration to Western countries so that artists can send money home. So that was the topic of my research.
And what happened? What did you find?
I found that actually, I mean, it was kind of a naive topic because Senegal does have a lot to support their artists. I was fortunate enough to be there during this amazing festival, the Festival Mundial des Arts Nègres, which is the World African Music Festival. And that year they had brought African artists from all over the continent to perform for a month. The program each day was like, you know, a page long of film, art, you know, like sculpture, dance performances, music. And so they really do support their artists. And more what it is an issue about is the disconnect with the younger generations trying to find work that is both honoring their tradition but also fitting into the new economy.
And what did that look like? What does that look like, honoring their traditions and fitting into the new economy?
I mean, to be honest, I'm not exactly sure yet. That was, as long as I was there, that was what I gathered, was that there is a disconnect. And I couldn't pretend to come up with solutions for that per se, but I did see a lot of promising work being done with the young griots, and just even like on their TV, on local TV, they're doing a lot of, they have always done a lot of arts in TV. So some way of meshing what is popular culture, what is traditional culture, and then what can be made into a job is what I think will make it a thriving economy.
What was it like for you as an American, white American growing up inside of an African dance tradition, but I mean in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Yeah, in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Then going and dancing in Africa, in Senegal, around some of the probably greatest dancers ever.
It's really humbling. I mean, I think being in America, the African dance scene here is small and intimate. And, you know, we know most of the artists who tour and do workshops around this country. And so, you know, we have a tiny little glimpse of it here, and I could pretend to know a lot about the culture, but going there and meeting and studying with some of these really great artists was, as I said, just humbling, and having more respect even for just the lineage and carrying down these traditions. It's much more than just a dance class, which is how we have it. It's our community here as well, but it's a rich culture, and I only know a part of it, so I'm still learning.
How did the people who you were learning from treat you in the sense of taking their lineage back home?
Yeah, I would say all of the people who I have had the fortune to study with have been really, really open and excited to share their culture. They're excited that people want to learn about their culture, and it's not a guarded thing that they hold on to tightly, because I think they see that the promulgation and the survival of art is by spreading it. And it was always just, I was touched by how much they were willing to share with me and teach me and just like include me in the formal things like dance classes, but also the informal things like just dance parties or gatherings. And they were always excited to kind of show off that Westerners were interested in learning from them. You know, it was an exciting thing. So being able to be there for an extended length of time, the 10 months that I lived in Senegal for the Fulbright, was an amazing opportunity to really delve into that more deeply.
One of the things that you talk about and that was a real advantage for you is the ability to learn other languages. Mm-hmm. What languages did you learn, and what was that like?
So in college, I studied Portuguese because I knew that I wanted to go to Brazil for my junior year abroad. And I was the kind of student who grew up in Santa Fe and like took Spanish from kindergarten through 10th grade and still could not really even put together a sentence. And so I was told, you know, maybe you're just not a language person, which was devastating, but also a relief. I felt like that kind of set me loose from the expectation of trying really hard and something I was never going to get good at. But in college, the way that they taught the language was with the expectation that in 2 years you would be living in that country and studying in that language. And so I think that expectation of my professors totally changed the way that I absorbed the language. And after studying Portuguese and realizing that I could speak and learn another language, then I went on to studying French and absorbed it like a sponge. I was just like so ready to learn different languages and different ways of thinking about things and different ways of connecting to people. And so when I was in Senegal, I did study in French in the master's program that I did there. But while I was there, I also picked up some Wolof, which is the traditional language in Senegal. And what I talk about in the book is just how being in other cultures and especially speaking other languages enables me to connect with people in a way that, but just even being around other people is a connection, but being able to speak in the same language is really facilitates an understanding, obviously.
Did you find that dance was kind of a language too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because I had a background in dance, showing people that I was somewhat versed in what they knew so intimately and so innately was exciting for both of us, because they would get excited seeing that I knew some things, and then I would get excited because I was there to, you know, show a little bit of what I knew, but also to learn more. And yeah, it's definitely a connection.
So what happened after you came back from Senegal?
So when I came back from Senegal, I went to my graduate program in city and regional planning, which I know we're thinking first I did microfinance, then I did education, then I did dance, and then I did city planning. But I did this master's in city planning at Cornell because I wanted to come back to Santa Fe and work on making this a place that we can live for generations to come. And the way that I could see that immediately happening was by shaping the infrastructure in which we live to support habitation and peaceful cohabitation with the earth. So that's one of the things also about the book, is that I tell people, like, okay, you don't have to be the kind of person who's always known they wanted to be a doctor to get a fellowship or a scholarship or get funding to do what you want to do. Because how many people are actually like that? Most people are, you know, at least interested in three different things and have probably picked up one of those interests in the last couple of years. But, you know, as long as you can put together a coherent story and some evidence and some support for what you're interested in, then you can make it happen through a fellowship or a scholarship or grant. And that's one of my main messages in the book. But so at Cornell, I did city and regional planning, and I got a fellowship to study there. Called the Foreign Language and Area Studies Scholarship. It's actually a scholarship. And so that my Portuguese that I had been studying in college came back into play, which was great. But I combined it this time with city and regional planning and looked at transportation systems in Portugal, because I had been living in Brazil in my undergrad year, and then, you know, connecting it to where those systems came from, which was in large part old Portuguese cities. So, So yeah, that therein began my interest in transportation systems and connecting it with language and other cultures. And currently where I work is at Bandelier National Monument. I do transportation planning for the National Park Service, and mostly alternative transportation planning. So bike planning, our shuttle that we've been having at the park, trails planning, signage, but, you know, how do we move people and how do we look to the future of how we're moving people so that there's still a way for people to get around, but it's not so so gas intensive or so right. Environmentally damaging.
Do you plan to stay in Santa Fe?
I really want to. Yeah, that's my goal. I never thought I would want to be here when I was growing up here. I thought I would leave forever, but Santa Fe is definitely where I want to be, and we're trying to make it work here. So,
Lucy Gent Voma is author of the new book, Funded, How I Leveraged My Passion to Live a Fulfilling Life and How You Can Too. She will be speaking on Saturday, April 30th at 5:30 at the Rail Yard Performance Center. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And of course, the Rail Yard Performance Center is where your parents yes. have been teaching all these years. A wonderful, wonderful space.
Thank you. That's my dad renovated that studio, and that's our building. So, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.